My name is Peggy Russo, and I am speaking with Mr. Dawson Yerkes about the Newton Steel Strike that occurred in Monroe, Michigan, in June of the year 1937. Mr. Yerkes, to begin with, could you explain to me what your involvement was with the strike?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm 65 years old. I joined the National Guard when I was 17 in 1935. The winter of 37, I spent 6 weeks in Flint on the GM strike. And I graduated from high school in the year of 37. I don't remember too much of whether we were mobilized or whether it was a volunteer group, but I know we were based at the Armory. At that time, I rode a motorcycle, and I was sent down to the picket line, more or less, as a spy, but I got kicked out. So I don't observe too much of it. But I remember it was a very dirty strike. People were highly intense. They were highly personalized. And basically, the people who worked at the plant, or the core of the plant, were people who came from Newton Falls, Ohio. And most of them were not in favor of the union. The union is a new concept to most people in this area. The thing that you have to remember is that Monroe is basically a paper mill town. And during the Depression, we had a lot of influx of people from various areas for Detroit and from Monroe because we still had employment. When the Newton plant came in, it was supposed to be a lifesaver of the town of Monroe. But basically, as it turned out later, the plant was doomed from the start, primarily because it was a flat plate mill. At that particular time, during it was being built, the strip mill came in. So it was only a matter of time before the plant would be obsolete and could not function on an efficient basis.
Can you describe to me the work in the Newton plant?
I can on a first-hand basis, but I can describe the conditions when I worked in the plant in 37. I hired in, and at that time, $5 an hour was a tremendous amount of wages. I had worked on the finishing flat hot mills and also on the pack shears. Now, when you worked on the hot mills, you had an oven. There was about 6 feet between the oven and the rolls. The rolls are heated to 1,800 degrees. The ovens were heated to 2,100 degrees. And you take a pair of tongs and pass the steel out of the oven and through the rolls, catch to it, catch on the other side, pass it back over the top of the rolls, and you redo it, passing it a few times, throwing charcoal between the sheets to keep it from sticking until you had the required thickness. Half an hour was the best that you could do. And you also wore a face mask to keep from burning your face. Incidentally, you could always tell a steel metal worker because his forehead and his cheekbones were burning red from the heat. And we were, as far as conditions, not the conditions you have today, but we were lucky to have it and we loved it. I worked there for, I can't remember just how too long, but then the public shut the mill down, and that was the end of that. As far as the conditions in town at that particular time, we had the WPA, we had Apple vendors, we had people starving. In other words, it was still not the depth of the Depression, but we hadn't come out of it at that particular time. To give you an aside, after I left the steel mill, I went to work in a grease monkey in a gas station, in which I worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, for $12 a week. I paid $3 for my room and $8 on the rest of it. That is the conditions that we ran into at that time.
Okay, could you tell me the relations in the plant with the management? How did they get along with the management?
Well, being a youngster, I can't comment on that too much. As I say, most people were very happy to have a job. So consequently, you were not antagonizing, because if you did, you ended up without a job.
And how were the relations between the workers themselves?
Normal. I'd say it's a normal type of operation. I've worked in several plants over the years, and it was more or less a standard relationship that you would have with workers in a plant.
Okay. How important was the Newton plant to the city of Monroe itself?
It was supposed to be a godsend to the city of Monroe because, basically, like I said, it was a paper mill town. And the paper mills had a real squeeze on the workers. And it was felt a Newton steel plant or any other outside influence would help all the workers in the city of Monroe.
Okay. Why did people join or oppose the CIO?
Well, insofar, I would say joining the CIO was more or less a dream, a theory, to eliminate basically a lot of working conditions that should not have been imposed. Other people were afraid of the CIO. It's standard from the, you might say it's a variation from the standard, so consequently they're afraid of what would happen. It's just typical of what happens in any aspect and anything new that comes in.
Okay. Can you describe in detail your day on the day when the picket line was broken?
No, I can't. I think we were more or less organized after the fact. But I do know that this area was on pins and needles, and people were arming. The thought was that the people from CIO and the people from Detroit were going to come down and actually tear this town apart. Not only bust the union, bust up the steel plant, but actually destroy the town. So people armed themselves. Actually, it was an armed camp for about a week.
Can you describe for me Monroe during the week or so when the citizens were armed with the gas masks?
Very, very tense. It was almost a curfew type of thing. People were very careful what they did. I do remember that they did have a more or less of a battle line someplace up around Flat Rock to intercept the so-called caravan that was supposed to be coming down from Detroit, which I don't believe ever happened.
Do you remember, like, what type of weapons they armed the people with?
Anything. No, the people, they were not armed by the establishment. They dug their arms out of their closets and so on and so forth. It was just strictly a motley army, if you want to call it that. Actually, I think one of the biggest things, fears, was that somebody would start something and through fear could develop into a royal battle with nobody knowing who they were fighting.
Yeah. We were told that some of the citizens of Monroe were deputized. Do you remember anything about that?
I think there were two groups. There was the group that was at the armory, and then there more or less was a citizen volunteer group, which I do not know too much about, but I remember there were actually two groups in that respect.
And you were at the armory?
I was at the armory at the time.
Okay. What were your thoughts and feelings about all of these happenings?
Well, basically, I spent 6 weeks in Flint, freezing. And I think the biggest, I had a resentment myself. Primarily, we were at number 4 engine plant. We had the thing completely shut down. We're starting to starve them out. And Murphy sent food in to him and pulled us back. We resented that highly after 6 weeks up there. So consequently, I did not have too much, you might say, favoritism towards the union. And at that time, being a youngster, my impression was through the battles that they had up at Flint that this was something that was developing. It was something new and people were getting hurt on.
Okay. Can you comment on the character of some of the major actors in the strike? And what kind of people were they?
I don't think you can differentiate these people from anybody else in a normal strike type of situation. you have the people who are very intense on one side, people who are very intense on the other side, and it's usually the mediators that usually get them together and quiet the fires, if you want to call it that. If you leave them go, there's going to be a battle royale.
Did the strike have any lasting impact on the city or on its people?
I think it did in one respect. I think it developed a distrust of unions, which is carried over in some parts of the city to this day. And unfortunately, I believe in unions. They have to have them because I know how some of the manufacturers treat their workers. They have to have somebody to protect them. But either excesses on either side, in my mind, are not tolerated. But there have been excesses. The pendulum swings both ways. But still, there are people in this town that do not believe are completely anti-union and will not even tolerate one in their business.
Do you recall any of the major political leaders at this time and perhaps what they stood for?
Well, you had Frank Murphy, who I had contact with indirectly in the Flint strike. Now, Frank Murphy was a good man. He went on to bigger things, and courts and so on and so forth, and actually, in retrospect, at this particular time, he was probably handled this the best way he possibly knew how, or probably the best way that it could be handled. Dan Nags, Mayor of Monroe, he was a typical mayor, no better, no worse than most of them, and I think he was a little bit out of his depth at that particular time. Jess Fisher, Monroe Chief of Police, he was a good chief. There was never anything against him. He ran a pretty tight ship, as far as I remember. Matter of fact, I got a ticket from him at one time. But he ran a good ship. Jess Fisher, Joe Barley, Monroe County Sheriff. He had been sheriff for quite a while. He had a good reputation. There was nothing ever against his reputation. And I think he was feeling his way to try to handle this thing without too much bloodshed. Roy Butler, he was acting captain of the volunteers. He was my first sergeant in the National Guard, the old Hollister County. He was a wonderful man, very tolerant man. But he was hard as nails when he had to be. Harry Davenport, commander of the Citizen Battalion, he was a second lieutenant in our guard company at that particular time. As far as the rest of them, and as far as the state police and the congressmen and so on and so forth, I had no association with them whatsoever. And also the personnel, as far as Republic Steel and the CIO, I had no association, I had no names that I can remember.
Is there anything else you would like to add about the condition of living during this time?
Well, it's kind of a personal thing. I born in Monroe, was on a dirt farm out in Frenchtown until I was about 7, 8 years old, moved up to Grape. My mother became a housekeeper up there, and then we moved back to town when I was 12, which was in 1932. To move back to town, we bought a home. We set up a washing route. She took in washings. My brother and I delivered those washings. We also had a rural mail paper out, Monroe Evening News, which we used during that entire time. At times, we did a lot of credit on the mail route. We take in vegetables and so on and so forth, and especially milk. And frankly, this day I'll not eat bread and milk because I lived on it for a week at a time during the Depression. It was a rough time. Besides that, the mail route and the washings, I myself started driving truck in Monroe here for quick delivery, which was a grocery route. 14 at the time, made $2 a day for a 12-hour day. And during my junior year in high school, I was out one day a week working on that truck. So you did as catch you can. You made a dime any place you can. And even after I left the gas station, I went to work for the county surveyor. And firsthand, I saw WPA because we surveyed the drains that these people dug by shovels. It was not a good time. It was a depressing time. The only thing I can say is you have to live through it to know what it actually was. But you'd do anything to turn a dollar. And at that time, a dime meant more than $100 does today.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Yerkes. And that concludes my interview of the Newton Steel Strike.